following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into the newest edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official look inside Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, fresh off a trip to Louisiana and getting ready for 1-2. It's not very often you see that you just came back from the boot state and then are heading back within 7 days, but it is what it is what it is.
Yeah, once you get to conference play, you don't get to pick when you go places and necessarily where you go places. This is definitely a little bit different. I'll give you a stat here later on in this episode about how unique this is, going to the same state for consecutive road games. But the important thing before we get too deep into Louisiana is that with the era that we're currently in, to know that this was the first true road trip for this group and roughly 150 bodies hopping a bird to go somewhere else with everything that's going on, everything was handled pretty well. Huge credit to Director of Operations Sean Fitzgerald for putting everything together, executing everything, and the fact that we got there and got home safely, I think, is the most important thing from that standpoint. Yeah, I wish the game would have gone better, but with everything that is going on, those were the things you were worried about, but I thought that they were handled really well.
Yeah, this was, strangely enough, this was one of the smoother trips that I think we've had in the last couple of years. Not to say that they're not, that they're always the craziest thing and rocky and all get out, but this may be, especially expecting things to be a little bit off just because of everything going on, I would say this one went off pretty well without a hitch. And when you can, I wasn't necessarily too thrilled about the early rise, but when you can kick off, play a game, fly from Louisiana to Savannah, get back to Statesboro, and be in your bed by 9:45, that's what you call a win.
Now, this weekend, it's not going to quite be like that, since this is going to be a 7 o'clock Eastern kick against the Warhawks, but we got this one, and then we'll go to the other end of the spectrum and maybe come back when the sun comes up.
Before we dive too deep into this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, reminder that Inside Eagle Nation is always presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Taking a look around other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. Started off with Georgia Southern men's golf. We talked about was up at the Scenic City Collegiate up in Tennessee last week. Finished it last Tuesday, tied for third as a team, but Ben Carr shot a 68 to post his first career collegiate win.
Well, it was nice that this one counts because over the summer last year, he won the summer tournament in Columbus where his brother helped caddy for him. And I think it had been 3 months to the day that his father had passed, so there was some added meaning behind that. But now that he gets one officially during the athletic season, they just keep doing things that's they don't necessarily surprise you, but they just keep doing things that now they're expected. And this is a program that Carter Collins has built, and the more that we can talk about them, the better that I think it makes the entire department look.
Men's golf will keep things rolling up in Birmingham this afternoon as they will start up the McDowell Invitational today if you're listening to this on time on Tuesday. Finish it up tomorrow on Wednesday at the Greystone Golf and Country Club. Georgia Southern men's soccer, after falling to Mercer 3-0 in Macon on Tuesday, battled back to open the home slate with a 3-2 win over UAB Saturday evening over at Eagle Field in Nerk Park. Had goals by Alhaji Tambadu, Adam Davey, who we've mentioned before, coming back from the injury at the tail end of last year. He's back in the lineup and scored a goal against UAB. And then Guy Diatti scored a goal as well, making up the three for Georgia Southern in the 3-2 victory over the Blazers of UAB. Georgia Southern women's soccer with a pair of tough losses on the week. Thursday night at Eagle Field fell 1-0 to the Mercer Bears, and then on Sunday, rain moved this game from the Georgia State Soccer Complex into Turner Field, but Georgia Southern fell to Georgia State 1-0. I don't know if they did the tomahawk chop at the 67th minute or not. But
well, I was curious as to whether or not they had to get the tarp off of the field, if they were in a rain delay, and if they were showing some bloopers up on the Jumbotron, or how exactly that worked.
You know, that's a very good point. Do they still have the tarp? If that's the case, only you can only play on half of the field.
I mean, we know Georgia State baseball does, so they don't use it at their field. But maybe they actually
they do
a Turner
field.
Yeah, well.
They will now. Trust me. That much I can tell you.
There it is down there in left field. Who knew?
There that little rascal is. Women's soccer looks to bounce back and get their first win of the year on South Alabama on Friday at 7 p.m. down in Mobile. And then on Sunday up at Troy at 1 p.m. Georgia Southern women's rifle split the past weekend with the Citadel in Charleston as Breanne Stanton placed second overall with a 571 in small bore and placed second in the aggregate with an 1142 in her first collegiate match. So her first collegiate match gets second overall in the aggregate. Ashley Judson led the way with air rifle with a tie for the top spot with a 579. They'll be back in Charleston this weekend to take on the Citadel once again. Georgia Southern Cross Country got to host their first meet of the season. Supposed to have one earlier on this season at the beginning of September, but with all the COVID concerns, that gets canceled. So held the Gatta Classic this past weekend over at the Bullitt County Disc Golf Course. Now, changing the course that they run for the 5K, but Georgia Southern hosts Coastal Carolina, as you would pretty well expect.
I know where this is going.
Yep, you've got a pretty good idea. It's Nguandala led all runners in the 5K with an 18:58 as Georgia Southern knocks off the Chanticleers.
Sunrise, sunset.
Yeah, just another day in cross country action.
Just another day.
Georgia Southern volleyball. I promise we're not just recording this once and replaying it over and over. This is actually happening every week.
Well, I think the people that religiously listen to this would be able to say, huh, that's the exact same thing she did about 2 years ago.
Yep. Really and truly, I wonder if we go back, if we can just kind of cut this snippet out of everyone from last year and just reuse it. It's kind of like a pastor every 3 years recycling their sermons.
Well, assuming they hang on to them.
Well, that's true. I would.
That would get tough eventually, trying to think of something new.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Well, kind of like us. I think eventually we look back at old scorebooks or say, you know what? I used to say that. Maybe I'm going to start saying that again, and it'll start sounding fresh.
Hey, that was cool. Georgia Southern Volleyball, again, supposed to open up their season this past weekend with a three-game series against Appalachian State. That one coming out because of COVID concerns up in Boone, that series was postponed. Trying to find a later date that one will be played. But now volleyball will open up the season up in Atlanta against Georgia State up on the third floor on Thursday and Friday of this week. It'll be Thursday evening and Friday at 1 o'clock first serve up from Atlanta. But a crazy game down in Acadiana this past weekend for Georgia Southern football. A final score of 20-18. The Raging Cajuns get the victory over Georgia Southern on a last-second 53-yard field goal off the toe of Nate Snyder. But when you go through this ball game, we've talked about it a lot over the last couple of days. Yes, the Cajuns had a number of guys out. We talked about it a little bit on Friday night tailgate because it came out later in the week on Wednesday last week of a number of guys that they were going to have out, a couple added on earlier on Saturday. But at the end of the day, this was a number 19th ranked Louisiana team and I think Coach Lunsford said it best. It was a 60-minute dogfight, and that's exactly what they were expecting.
And that's exactly how we began inside Georgia Southern football last night over at the Gene Bishop Fieldhouse. It literally came down to the final play of the game. And if you would have told Georgia Southern that they could have won the game, but it was dependent on a kicker who was 2 of 6 going in, trying to knock one through from 53, I think that you would have taken that, especially considering that Nate Snyder had missed a shorter kick going the same direction to end the first half. But after a timeout was called by Louisiana, Terry thought it was icing his own kicker, which I still think is hilarious. But for him to line that up and knock it right down the middle with about 5 yards to spare, credit him for having the kind of mental stability and the focus to make that kick to get the Cajuns to 3-0. And it offset the fact that the Eagles, I thought, played really well. And I went back and watched this. I think I watched every play 2 or 3 times. It was a very even game. The statistics show that. Georgia Southern with a thin margin in terms of total yardage. I think Georgia Southern was the better team on Saturday. Yeah. Not by much, but if you're talking battle of the line of scrimmage, more often than not, it was Georgia Southern that was winning that battle. And I know we see all the time, 99 times out of 100, the team that wins the battle up front is the team that's going to win the game. Well, it just so happens that the one time that it didn't was Saturday.
Yeah.
And the Cajuns made one more play. After the last drive, the crazy catch by Caleb Hood, one of the best catches I've ever seen on any level, and then the guts to go for two and the lead, I'm sure at that time they were thinking and the win, but to go for it, Shai Wirtz makes one of the best plays of his career, keeping the play alive. Darion Anderson makes the catch for an 18-17 lead, but the Cajuns, that's why they're 19th, because they made plays when they needed to, and they got Nate Snyder an opportunity to correct the wrong from before. And granted, he had made a field goal earlier that half. It was a short field goal, but watching the video, he almost missed that one too from 25. That one barely got in the right side of the uprights. You got to tip your cap when it's due. Georgia Southern did not struggle nearly as much as they did against Campbell the game before. A lot of guys out. You had a lot of guys back. But you always look for that improvement from game one to game two. There was a lot of improvement, especially up front. Yeah, does the pass defense still need a little bit of work? Of course. But with all the youth back there, that's something that's just going to take time. And I think that's going to be something we're just going to have to deal with this year. Teams may get their passing yards, but ultimately, if the Eagles can find a way to win, then that's something that you're not happy about. But as they gain experience, I think that that's just going to naturally get better.
And this isn't us trying to sugarcoat it, because I don't think anybody in Statesboro would tell you that a 20-18 victory for Louisiana is something that Georgia Southern wanted to happen on Saturday. But at the same time, I think you and I talked about it, and I can't remember what we talked about it in last week, but at some point, you and I discussed the fact that when you look at that Campbell game, one of the benefits that you take from that is that you had so many young guys playing in a 2-minute drill on defense. Campbell does march down the field. They do score. Expected when you're having 2, 3, 4, 5 guys on that defense playing in that situation for their first time in their collegiate career. You see the similar situation on Saturday against Louisiana. This time, Georgia Southern in a 2-minute defense, less than a 2-minute defense, able to hold Louisiana. And really, truly, I don't know that you would necessarily, obviously you don't want to give up a field goal, but I would say if you're forcing Louisiana, or anybody for that matter, to nail a 52-yard field goal rather than either getting it closer or getting it in the end zone, that's a little bit of a win. I know that sounds absolutely crazy, and I know there's no moral victories, blah, 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 but you've got to see just from the fact of you talk about seeing the progress of this team, and you see it from, obviously, week one to week two, but there's a week in between. That's a whole nother story. But very similar situations in game one, game two. Game two goes a lot better than game one did.
The touchdown that Campbell scored with 15 seconds left in game one was off of a scramble drill where the secondary got out of position. Haj Malik Williams found Jalen Kelce to cut it to one, and then thankfully for the fate of Eagle Nation, he missed the two-point conversion. The Eagles won by a point. I go back to the play before the field goal last Saturday. Levi Lewis got away from pressure. Another scramble drill. He throws it into the end zone. It would have been a 36-yard touchdown pass, and it was one-on-one coverage. But Javon Singletary made the play. He actually forced Aaron Rodgers out of bounds. So even if he would have caught the football, it wouldn't have counted because the official dropped his hat at the end of the play. And I was so focused on the play itself. Terry on the broadcast said, look at the clock. And when he said that, I thought, did all 10 seconds go off? Because I remember saying right before that play, extend this play as long as you can. You're happy with Levi Lewis gallivanting around because if it consumes clock and for some reason it's done, then the game's over. Look up to the clock.
I was thinking the exact same thing because I couldn't see the clock from where I was.
Because you and I looked up at the same time. Oh, there's 2 seconds left.
I'm leaning out like, what?
There's 2 seconds left. And at that point, Nate Snyder comes on. It was a crushing way to end the game, but what impressed me traveling home, because as we mentioned last week, outside of the team and its personnel, we were the only other people on the charter. There was not a dejected feeling on that plane.
No.
It was a, all right, it happened, we good. Let's keep it going. We know what we have now, we're good.
And I'll take that a step further. There were at least two or three guys that at some point over the last couple of days have said, yeah, they may have gotten us on Saturday, but there's a chance that Georgia Southern and Louisiana meet again. It would be the conference championship.
Correct.
At the end of the season. But I guarantee you, if Georgia Southern and Louisiana meet December 5th, 12th, whatever it ends up being, that's going to be a ball game.
We're a long way from it, and that would involve the Eagles beating a certain team from Boone for the third consecutive year, which the game is down here a couple of Wednesdays from now after this ULM game. You cannot peek ahead because the other way around 2 years ago, Georgia Southern got the huge win against App and then went down and laid an egg at ULM. And we'll get to that when we talk about the Warhawks in the final segment. But I think that there was just so much good that happened in this game. Yeah, there were some squandered opportunities. The first drive, missing a fourth down inside the five-yard line, nearly ending that streak of game-opening drives that have not produced a touchdown. It's going to be 29 straight going into the weekend. Having an offsides on fourth and two, missing a field goal. Of course, there were things you can do better, but I think that there, if you want to nitpick, you can find something in every game that you could do better. Look at some of the blowouts that Georgia Southern has had. You can nitpick and find things that the Eagles could always do better, but only two penalties, that offsides, while it was vital for Louisiana to extend that drive during the second quarter, it was one of only two Georgia Southern penalties. They didn't have a single penalty in the second half. And for an option-based team to throw for 255, they averaged 23 yards of completion. And I think that the thought has been, well, the Eagles threw it a lot more last Saturday because they had all those yards. They only threw 18 passes, still ran the ball 49 times. That's about where you want to be if you're an option team, somewhere between 49 and 60 carries. Shy Fortz was 11 out of 18. He averaged 23 yards of completion.
And I think it...
That's awesome.
I think Saturday's game was the quintessential game of what we've talked about for really the last couple of years, throwing the ball when you want to rather than when you have to. And I think Georgia Southern did a phenomenal job of that on Saturday.
And even late, when they had to throw, they still were able to do it. The Cajuns knew they were going to throw on the final drive, and they still couldn't stop it. Shy was 4 of 4, 51 yards on that last drive. Caleb Hood with a Zach Walker-like catch, one-handed in the end zone.
Oh, good call.
I thought about that just yesterday. That, okay, what receiver was making plays like that? And I remember the catch he made against Chattanooga a number of years ago, the one against Wofford here at Paulson Stadium. That it reminded me of something like that, and maybe the catch Mark Mashad made against Liberty in the bowl game last year. Georgia Southern nearly executed its offensive game plan flawlessly. The only thing they could have done better was get into the end zone a couple of more times because I think they put themselves in position to do so. They continued to move the football. They got themselves, number one, to hang on to the football. They did so for more than 35 minutes. Terrific. They were in third and short almost all afternoon. Georgia Southern had 14 third down plays. 9 of those were third and three or less. That is outstanding. That's exactly where you want it to be. But That first drive, as good as it was, 15 plays, more than 8 minutes, it would have meant so much more to get it into the end zone. Cajuns made a play. Cajuns got a stop. A couple of other drives for Georgia Southern went double-digit plays in more than 7 minutes, but they only had 3 points off of those other two drives. So all of that time they consumed to only score 3 points, that's what hurt. I think Georgia Southern could have won the game by multiple scores, but the way the Cajuns threw the ball, I think they could have won the game by 2 scores. But it turned out that it was a well-played game. It was an evenly matched game because as many guys as the Cajuns had out, look who Georgia Southern lost at various points during the contest, especially on defense. Javon Jackson hurt his foot. He's probably going to be out this weekend. Dexter Carter got hurt. C.J. Wright, Raymond Johnson had to leave at various points. Georgia Southern was playing with twos and threes on the defensive line for much of the second half. And Gavin Adcock, that little Wolverine out of Watkinsville, if he doesn't make those 2 plays late in the fourth quarter by disrupting Louisiana's run game, maybe Georgia Southern doesn't get the ball back so Wirtz can find Hood and set up those dramatics at the end of the game.
A lot of good things to take from this game, and obviously it's not what anybody in Eagle Nation was looking for, but you get the opportunity to get things right on Saturday against the ULM Warhawks, a 7 o'clock Eastern kick from down at Malone Stadium in Monroe, Louisiana. We'll dive more into the Warhawks in a little bit, but for now we step aside for some Eagle Tales with our good buddy Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, one of the best to ever do it in Statesboro, did it at multiple positions over the course of his career. What do you remember about Jason Foster?
Jason Foster is one of the most admirable kids we'll ever have at quarterback. Is he the best quarterback we'll ever have? Absolutely not. But he was by far one of the best athletes we've ever had. And when you've got an athlete that talented, you need to find a way to get the ball in his hands. Van Gorder wouldn't do that, and Chris Hatcher did. The bad thing that I dislike about Van Gorder is when he told a guy named Amani Edwards that he was not good enough to play football at Georgia Southern. We had him signed along with his backup quarterback at that. We had both those guys signed. And Brian told them they were not good enough to play here at Georgia Southern. So they went to Boone. And as Paul says, you know the rest of the story. What if, you know, the what ifs? If those two had came here, where would Georgia Southern be as we speak? We'll never know the rest of that story. Who's the quarterback? You know, when you look at that, who's the quarterback? I mean, you're going to find a way to get the ball to somebody. That's when you use an 8 or 9 flea flicker and play. You know, you flee it to him and flicker it back to the other one. But we'll never know the rest of those stories as they play out.
Thank you, Roger. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
We continue on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Take a look inside Beyond the Bio as we step into the office of the budget analyst for Georgia Southern Athletics and Josh Turner. Josh, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thanks, Colin. My pleasure. Appreciate you having me on.
Taking a little bit back of a dive into your story, you graduated from Southeastern University, played baseball there. What was your experience as a student athlete like then?
Man, it was great. I look back at that experience, and when you advance in your professional career, you think back to when your coaches say you're going to miss your 6 a.m. workouts, you're going to miss your bus ride, you're going to miss the peanut butter and jelly in between games. And at the time, you don't necessarily think so. But looking back at that experience, baseball in particular has a way of humbling you, right? The game itself can humble you. And so I've had my fair share of, you know, 0 for 10s or 0 for 15s at the plate. And in much like, you know, in other sports, you can't necessarily go over 10 on as a quarterback or over 10 on your shots as a basketball player. But as a baseball player, a coach is probably going to throw you back in there and say, hey, get after it. You can help us on defense. And so all that to say, I think there were life lessons that I took away from the game that stick with me to this day, all the way from, you know, the T-ball days to through college, of where I really, you know, had to adapt to situations like that, had to remain, you know, tenacious, resilient, and really be a team player and know that I could add value in a couple different perspectives, both defensively, on the base paths, things of that nature. But yeah, I would say in the grand scheme of things and very holistically, baseball was absolutely my passion, and I still love the game, but it's something that has really helped me in my professional career.
Once you graduated, when did you decide that athletics was something that you wanted to make into a career?
Yeah, so I actually gave entertainment to a thought of becoming a GA for baseball at Southeastern. I actually took the opportunity at IMG Academy as the enrollment coordinator and thought that it would give me some business operations experience. And truth be told, I didn't know how long I'd be there, to be honest. But I really got ingrained in the culture of IMG and took my position and kind of grew my responsibility, I would say that the culture of IMG is a very special one in that they're at the cutting edge of, you know, athletics and the cutting edge of athlete performance and development. And so I think when you're ingrained in that culture on a day-to-day basis, you know, you have a way of moving into the culture and contributing to that culture in whatever position you're in. And so I say that to say that, you know, looking back at my experience, I wanted to get in college athletics at some point down the line, but I knew that IMG would give me that business operations background and then progress me into different areas inside of IMG Academy, inside of that athletics, you know, performance portal, so to speak. And so all that to say, you know, I knew that college athletics specifically was a long-term aspiration of mine, and IMG really prepared me and teed me up for that well. You know, here I am today, happy to be a part of Georgia Southern.
What a part of the business finance, part of the athletic side of it. What really drew you to that?
Yeah, I don't think there's one particular thing that draws me to, you know, business or finance. I would say that, you know, in terms of compliments, I think that the highest praise you can get from an individual is when they say, hey, listen, this is the guy behind our numbers. This is the guy that keeps us afloat. For me and my skill set, I've always been someone who's analytical, who tries to be objective, not subjective. I think looking back at my professional experiences from, you know, IMG to E15, and even as a player, really trying to bring that analytical or numeric perspective to things really helps me see the world differently, but also go about things different than most.
You talk about your time at IMG. You spent 3 years down at IMG as the athletic program manager for baseball. What are some of the things that you take from that experience? You talk about getting ingrained in the culture. What are some of the things you take from that experience and use today?
Yeah, so like I said, IMG is on the cutting edge of athletic performance, nutrition, mental health. And so I think looking at that holistically, to have that as my first experience out of college really built a strong foundation for me, not just in this job, but in any job moving forward. The specific position is of being the program manager. It exposed me to having to use my organizational skills, having to, you know, create a budget from scratch, really ingrained with the coaches and personnel that we had on a day-to-day basis to understand that, you know, we were placing the emphasis of our budget and our finances and our materials and how we executed on player development, but also making sure that we were enriching program development as well. So all encompassing, I think IMG, again, just gave me such a foundation to build upon that I'll forever use throughout the tenure of my professional career.
You then move on to partner strategy analyst for E15 Group, working with the Tampa Bay Rays specifically. Seeing the business side from kind of the Major League Baseball portion, where does that kind of make you a little bit better?
Yeah, so that particular position really changed my perspective on business. It gave me a different lens as to what to, you know, how to go about my day-to-day, what that communication looks like on an executive level. And it was a little bit different in that I was, you know, triangulating around people, process, and results. I was reporting to a firm or E15 Group in Chicago, while I was also reporting to and working as a consultant for the Tampa Bay Rays. And so I think combining that experience with my previous experience at IMG as well as a student athlete, it gave me a different perspective of communicating on that executive level, so to speak, but also gave me a different lens as to which I can see business through. And that's really going to help me in not only this job, but moving forward, how I can aid and execute the communication level to Jared, Chris, and Haley.
What was the big draw to come to Statesboro and be a part of the Georgia Southern Athletics team?
You know, it's funny you asked that, Colin. I was put on my knees a little bit by COVID. I was furloughed when I was with E15 and then ultimately laid off. And that kind of reset my direction of where do I pivot? How do I pivot? What are my core roots? And ultimately, what value do I bring to an organization, right? That was business and finance. And then those core roots were student athlete, right? You missed the smell of the grass, you missed the locker room. And while that isn't necessarily part of my job here, being, you know, in the grass and in the locker room, so to speak, it is part of my core roots, right? And it leads to a bigger purpose. You know, I think looking back at that particular moment in time, I had reached out to Jared. He was making the transition from Starkville to Statesboro. I had watched his press conference. I watched Dr. Marrero speak. I watched how Jared went about relationships with people, and that really appealed to me. Those are things and qualities that I hope to obtain and hope that, you know, people would see in me at a later date and time, if not now. And so I reached out to Jared and said, hey, listen, I really appreciate the way you've gone about, you know, things so far in Statesboro, the way you go about relationships. And I want to know if you'll be able to, you know, or be willing to review my resume, give me some feedback and criticism for what you think, you know, might be a good fit for me in college athletics, and this is kind of the direction I want to go. And so he was gracious enough to give me, you know, 45 minutes of his time. A couple of weeks went by. Actually, I think it was a little bit more around months, but he reached out to me. I remember it was yesterday, June 19th. I think it was around 6:45 p.m. I was up in Virginia with my parents, and he said, "Hey, listen, we have a potential opening. I think you might be a good fit. I'd encourage you to interview for it. I'll keep you up to date. Just want to let you know." And so me and my wife talked about the opportunity, drove up here to Statesboro and the surrounding area, visited, and really felt like it was a strong fit for us, not only culturally, but from a professional perspective. And so here I am today, blessed to be a part of the athletic department, and really thankful that I reached out to Jared.
When you talk to anybody around athletics, especially at the Division I level, one of the biggest things that you always hear is so many people have played a part of their life and their career. Who are some of the mentors that you kind of look to, even still today, that have kind of really impacted you?
So I think the first and correct answer is my parents. But from a professional perspective and from a mentor perspective, I have to look to Jason Elias. He's the associate AD at IMG Academy. Really was a mentor to me in that he taught me how to respect the chain of command. He taught me how to vertically and horizontally communicate, sometimes at the same time. And then outside of that, I think, you know, mentors in the collegiate athletic space, most importantly, Jared, right? Jared Binko. And then I would go with Jeremiah Dickey at Baylor and Matt Whitty at North Texas, all playing an instrumental part and really the position I'm in today, but also, you know, helping craft that resume and helping be, you know, a resource for me on many different areas or ideas that I may have.
When you talk to anybody in athletics, and one of the biggest parts of why we really started this podcast was to tell the stories of the people inside Georgia Southern Athletics. When you go through athletics and have a career in athletics, there's no doubt you have some pretty incredible experiences. What are some of those for you?
So I'm going to go with playing experiences, and then I'm going to go with one personal experience. I think all are unique, and so it's going to be an interesting one. But the first one would be high school showcase baseball. I'm pitching against Corey Seager, strike him out on three pitches. That's a personal accomplishment of mine. Secondly, and I remember this one like it was yesterday, Cedric Mullins, who's the center fielder for the Orioles, was a college teammate of mine, and I remember I was leading off the inning against a guy named Evan Krasinski. He's in AAA with the Cardinals now, really good pitcher. He threw me down and out sliders, 2-0, and then I hit a ball back up the middle. I get on first base, still second. Long story short, we get bases loaded, and we're playing the number one seed in the tournament. It's a conference tournament in junior college, and Cedric comes up to bat, first pitch, hits a ball about 425 feet or so. And for some reason, this particular thing sticks out of my mind. We beat the number one seed in the tournament. And why I think this is important and probably why it sticks out of my mind is really being that table setter, right? Being that trendsetter, being a leadoff guy or a nine-hole hitter type, so to speak. You're there to set the tone. And I think that's such a, you know, it not only was it important then, but I think it's important in my day-to-day now of setting that tone, being an energy giver, not an energy taker. From a professional perspective, and again, this is going to be a unique experience. When I was at IMG in my free time, I would freelance for a company called Baseball Prospectus, and I would scout the Florida State League. And so it packed inside of that. And again, long story short, I met a guy named Tom Zimmer, who is Don Zimmer's son, and the countless stories and insight that he gave me about Yankees greats, Yankees traditions, his dad, as well as the boss, George Steinbrenner, will be something that I'll forever cherish.
Finally, before we let you go, give us something beyond your bio.
Going to go with an oddball answer here. I can do two things, and I taught myself how to do both of them. One, play guitar. Two, moonwalk.
You can moonwalk?
I can moonwalk.
That's amazing. We'll have to get it on Facebook Live eventually.
There you go. Sounds good. This floor has to be slick, though.
Beautiful. Josh, appreciate the time. Thank you for everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Colin.
Once again, that's Josh Turner, the budget analyst for Georgia Southern Athletics. And this is somebody that I think you and I are going to be very good friends with. A baseball guy. He already talked about how him and Don Zimmer's son got to know each other. He got all kinds of Don Zimmer stories, Steinbrenner stories, and something tells me when some baseball guys get together and Don Zimmer and George Steinbrenner stories get involved, there's going to be a good time.
So you're saying when we inevitably have a rain delay this spring, we're going to need him?
He's my first stop.
Be a toss-up between him and Chris Davis, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Because if you need to get through a rain delay, I'm going to guess Chris Davis could get you through that rain delay.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind on that one. But Georgia Southern will hope for clear skies. It's supposed to be a little chilly down in Monroe this weekend.
You know, I'm okay with a little bit of early fall.
I'm 100% okay
because
with it.
We've had more than enough rain in Statesboro for the last couple months, and with COVID, we're not supposed to be doing any unnecessary travel. I'd be okay with a little bit of a fall chill. You know, the what do they call it, sweater weather?
All I know is when you get to the weather where I can put on a pullover,
yeah,
I'm ready to rock and roll.
Well, especially at 7 o'clock. Well,
that's why the early part of baseball season is so great. You just throw on a pullover, and you are ready to roll for a month.
All right, I'm tangling a little bit. I want to wait on that for a little while. But being that it's a 6 o'clock game local on Saturday, I'm going to guess it's going to be a little bit cooler. Just naturally, I know Statesboro doesn't necessarily follow the climate of the rest of the world.
Hey, we did for about a week there, or a couple of days. It got a little chilly. And I say a little chilly, I mean like low 70s.
Turn the heat on.
Woo! It was enough for me to break out a pullover, I can tell you that much.
But considering that last week we were up before the sun and kicking it off at 11 a.m. Central, doing it at 6 o'clock Central, we're going to figure out how to fill the rest of the day.
I don't know. I can tell you that the sun is going to beat me this week.
Yeah.
The sun is going to beat me by a considerable margin this week.
And it will also be, how does the coaching staff prepare a team from, all right, get up and go, almost like a getaway day in minor league baseball, to a, all right, we've got to figure out a schedule so these guys aren't amped up and ready to charge through someone at 7 o'clock in the morning. Got to be able to conserve that, and then be able to have a focused yet strong effort by the time the evening gets here. Almost like a home game early in the season at Paulson.
Taking a deeper dive into the ULM Warhawks, a tough start to the season. 0-3 on the year so far for ULM, and really have struggled, especially on the offensive side. A couple of new pieces to add to a couple of the older pieces, but you look at the start for the quarterback, Colby Suits taking over for Caleb Evans, who is one of the better quarterbacks that ULM has had in its history. But you look at a guy in Suits trying to come in, the sophomore, played in 4 games last year in 2019, just 1 game in 18, but you can tell he has the pieces, and he is going to be a really good quarterback for this team. It just hasn't necessarily clicked on all cylinders for him quite yet.
There's a couple of reasons why. Number one, offensive coordinator from the last couple of years, Matt Kubik, left in the offseason to go to Southern Miss. So Matt Viator, the head coach, who's now in year 5, is back calling plays, and that's something that he had done in his prior stop at McNeese. Remember, he was the OC there before becoming the head coach. They went to the playoffs 5 times when he was in the FCS. So he's back calling plays again, and from reports, he hasn't really changed the scheme or the terminology all that much. But he's breaking in 4 new starters on the offensive line. He brings back TJ Fiola at right guard, somebody that broke his ankle last year in the 4th game of the season, missed a majority of the year, and the guy that's at right tackle was Sam Williams. He stepped in for Fiola last year, so I think he's trying to acclimate himself to a new position. The most troubling thing about ULM's offense and why they're not clicking, they can't run the football. In 3 games, they have 111 yards combined. Not per game. This is a team that ran for better than 200 yards a game a year ago. 111 combined, no rushing touchdowns in their first 3 games. And what's troubling about that, Josh Johnson is a really good running back.
Yeah, he's a dude.
Nearly 1,300 yards and 11 touchdowns last year. 6.5 yards per carry, was 10th best in the country. They can't get him on track. His longest gain of the year is 25 yards. So a quarter of what they've run for all season came on one run. That doesn't make any sense for somebody that's talented. And they've got the league's best tight end in Josh Peterson, who's son of Doug Peterson, the current head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. He's been okay, but they can't feature him because they cannot run the football. That being said, in the games where they've been able to establish something, it seems they've been at their best when they've gone, number one, quickly, and number two, when they've just been true pass. 4-5 wides, let Suits just throw the ball. He threw for 377 against Texas State. Now, that was a game they were down 2 scores most of the contest, but they said, we can't run, so let's just throw the ball to all of our weapons. Jaquan Bloomfield is a speedster. Jevin Frett is somebody that has big play potential. He's a junior college transfer. They have guys that can make plays, and with those two on the outside, and then being able to sneak Peterson in whatever framework that they decide to, there's guys that can make plays on that offense, but when you cannot run the football, it affects everything you do. They get way too many third and longs. Here's a crazy number I'll throw at you. Last week against UTEP, they were 0 for 11 on third downs. They've missed their last 19 third down tries.
Oh, honey.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. And you combine that with the defense that can't get off the field on third down, it seems that whatever they do, whenever it's one step forward, it's about five steps back. It's not just two steps back. Whenever they do something good, they can't keep moving forward. Now, they just need it to click. And maybe at some point it's going to. Now, so far, the best that they've done is score 17 points against Texas State. Against Army, they were held to 7. A week ago against UTEP, they were held to 6. Under 200 yards of offense, they only had 6 first downs. So law of averages say it's going to start to improve at some point. They're 0-3. I can't see a team that's that talented on offense not be able to do more eventually. And that's why in this league, as we have found out the last 2 years, in this league, there is no such thing as a gimme.
No. Nope.
Anyway, so if the Eagles play like they did last week, handle your business. But if for some reason they can't stay locked in, then this is a more than capable offense that's going to score points.
Before we switch over to the defense, we've talked about the offensive struggles early on this season for ULM. But the biggest thing that jumps out to me on paper, they've only scored 9 points in the second half.
Yeah.
All 9 of those have come in the third quarter. They have yet to score in the fourth quarter in 3 games. And I realize you're just looking at 3 games, but to not have scored in the fourth quarter, you got them, especially when in all of those games you're down at that point, that's got to be really troubling for the Warhawks.
I think when they've thrown, they've been able to move it. But when you're down by so much, I think it's just here we go again. They couldn't stop Army's option after the third quarter. They made some decent plays in the first 30 to 35 minutes, but they just got worn down. That was a game where they were dealing with the effects of having 11 days removed from camp because of a COVID situation. They also got hit with the after effects of Hurricane Laura. It wasn't supposed to go through Monroe, but it ended up causing substantial damage. They didn't have classes until after Labor Day. They were getting a new dorm built, and they've been living in hotels. So they've been in a little bit of a situation for about 6 weeks now. Oh, by the way, defensive coordinator Mike Collins resigned on September the 2nd. He had been dealing with some family issues. He had donated a kidney to his sister that offseason, and I think that he just couldn't go forward anymore. He gave it whatever he could. He was one of two guys remaining from Matt Viator's original staff in 16. Now the guy that's the only one left is the current DC who got promoted in Scott Stoker, who was on staff at Sam Houston at one time with both Bob DeBess and Doug Roos. So if it's a benefit for Georgia Southern going into this, it's that both of the guys that are offensively in the booth for the Eagles, they've worked with this guy, and they've competed against this guy, so they're going to know how to attack this 4-2-5 defense. And then just yesterday, their All-American cornerback, Corey Strotter, announces that he's going to have wrist surgery. He's out for the rest of the season. Now, the Eagles, outside of last week, aren't going to throw the ball a ton. I mean, maybe they do from here on, depending on how successful it was. But knowing that he's not there, I'm just curious how that unit responds as well with the offense also trying to figure it out.
Strotter, one of two guys that it came out on Monday that initially looks like is going to be absent for ULM. Strotter along with defensive lineman and Mason Hussman. Those are two guys that are going to be keys for this defense. But as we've said every week, you've got to just kind of sit back and wait till Wednesday or Thursday until you really know what team you're going up against.
I'd like to tell you that Georgia Southern's inactive list is going to keep getting smaller and smaller. I think it was 8 guys last weekend, and some of those were injuries. I think some were still contact tracing. Some were out for the year. Some maybe are going to be coming back, but you don't know who else is going on that list. The next few days are vital.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what was picked up in the first true road trip of the year. Yeah, we were all on a plane. We all wore masks for an hour and a half down, an hour and a half back, but being in another city for about a day, you want to have protocols and be as responsible as you can in certain situations, but sometimes it's just unavoidable. I know we're going to have tests again tomorrow, but if anybody has developed symptoms before then, if that'll be made available when we meet with Coach Lunsford on Thursday, is there going to be any more information that we're given regarding the status for the rest of the team? But if we find out that numbers are good, then I think we have to applaud even more the job that this staff has done to ensure that these guys are safe.
When you look at this ULM defense, one of the big things that kind of jumps out is the fact that you've got a good amount of experience and a good amount of experience at ULM. There have been times in the past where we say it's an experienced defense, but if it's transfers coming in, it can almost be like you're starting over as a rookie again. This is a ULM defense that a good chunk of it has been there for a couple of years.
And they were mostly there as backups.
Yeah.
So they know the system. Granted, it's a new defensive coordinator, but like on offense where Coach Viator wasn't really changing things up that much, Scott Stoker took over, what, less than 2 weeks before that Army game? So even if he wanted to do things differently, I don't think it would be very feasible to do that because you're just going to confuse everybody. That, and he was operating with about a half a deck with all the guys they had to leave home before they took off to West Point to try to start their season. They had 13 guys start their first career game against Army. Not exactly a recipe you want when you're facing the Flexbone.
No.
Or anybody for that matter, but especially the Flexbone and especially the way that Army runs it. Once they can get settled, I think that they're going to show the league that they've got some guys. But the deeper it gets into the season, if they can't establish any confidence, it's going to be tough for them to show what they really have. Because I don't think they're an 0-3 team.
No.
I really don't. And that's real easy to say to try to pump up one side. I don't believe it. They were a 9-point favorite against UTEP last weekend because UTEP has been bad for years.
Yes.
Their two wins this season going into that game were against FCS teams. They hadn't beaten an FBS team in 15 tries. And they were a 9-point dog going to ULM. They dominated the game. Who knew? ULM just, they didn't have it. They missed tackles. They couldn't sustain drives. They were in third and long all game. Again, they couldn't run the ball. They had 7 yards rushing. Seven for the game. Josh Johnson had 9 carries for 19 yards. You can't win if you can't run the football. Do they do it this weekend? Hope not. But like I said before, law of averages says it's going to click at some point for them. I don't see them going 0-12 because it's difficult to go undefeated. I think it's difficult to also lose every game too because you're going to walk into something eventually, like what Georgia Southern did in 2017, 0-9 and then 52-0 against South Alabama. Who saw that?
Hello, South Al.
Who saw it? I think that they are – they're too gifted in too many areas to not put it together at some point. For the Eagles, it is their second straight road trip to the same state. By the way, that's the first time that's happened in 13 years.
I was wondering when you were going to get to that. You teased it a little bit earlier.
Well, I almost forgot until right now. But back in 2007, Eagles had back-to-back road games in North Carolina going to Elon and App State. Those are both car trips. This is different, having to get on a plane and fly to the same state in consecutive weeks. Does jet lag click in? What will the depth situation be like? Those are questions that are going to be answered over the next few days. But if the Eagles continue to improve at the rate that they did from Campbell to Louisiana, this team is going to be just fine. Just fine. I think the offensive line, they showed some nasty, which I love to see against a Cajun team that is known for being really good on the offensive and defensive lines. I think that the more that Wesley Kennedy practices, I think he would have taken a couple of those to the barn had he been, I'm not going to say he was out of shape, but I don't think he was completely full go. And especially the first pass, the 61-yarder, I think the Kennedy of last year, I think he scores on it. To me, it looked like he would have scored on it. And I think that the play designs allowed him to get into the open field. And I just think that the more they do this, the more guys they keep getting back, the improvement was already shown. And there's still a lot more for these guys to do. And if they want to play in the Sun Belt Championship game, they can easily represent the East. I wouldn't think about stubbing your toe much more. But you don't know how many games you're going to have left. Because you don't know what other games you're going to lose. You don't know what else is going to happen the next few months. Just got to take care of Saturday.
Before we wrap up this edition of Inside Eagle Nation, one other guy that I want to point out, and this is a cool story that we talked about it a lot last year, but I wanted to revisit it. And Isaiah Phillips, the backup running back for ULM, and what he did for this ULM team a year ago. when they were getting ready to play Georgia Southern, they didn't necessarily have somebody to run the scout team offense and mimic a option style attack. So what do? They take Isaiah Phillips, who is a running back, and put him at quarterback on the scout team and have him mimic Shy Wertz as much as he can. To me, that is really cool.
I would have loved to have seen some video about how he mimics Shy Wertz, because some of the things that Shy does, I don't even know how he mimics himself.
I don't know if Shy could mimic Shy.
Phillips is going to see some action this weekend as ULM's kick returner. He might work his way in running the football. They've also got Javon Myers and, of course, Josh Johnson, who we also talked about. And for teams that only get a week to get ready for this specific kind of offense, if you can find somebody that can even get close to that, I think it's absolutely valuable.
For sure. One final note, as Georgia Southern gets ready for ULM this weekend, it'll be with a little bit of heavy heart, as news coming out on Monday of the passing of former Georgia Southern long snapper, formerly Terry Harvin's long snapper, and Stan Stipe. And this is a guy a lot like Amel McBride, a lot like people that we hear about week in and week out from Terry, of what he did not only as a player for Georgia Southern, but as a person for Eagle Nation, both while he was here and after he graduated from Statesboro. Being able to have such an impact on Eagle Nation, our thoughts and prayers obviously go out to his family and everybody in Eagle Nation affected, because I know he touched a lot of people here in this community.
You probably never saw his name on a stat line, but it would have been very tough to play a game without him. Georgia Southern's first great long snapper, who Terry has brought up numerous times in these situations and on games, Waycross High School. He had recently been inducted into the Waycross High School Athletic Hall of Fame alongside Roger Inman. I never had a chance to meet Stan, but I do know that he was a huge Jacksonville Jaguars fan, and I know it had gotten very difficult for his family and the teammates that he had over the last few years because he had been battling Alzheimer's. 170 pounds soaking wet, but somehow was able to be a part of some of those really special teams, 85 and 86 national championship teams. Georgia Southern never had a kick blocked while he was the long snapper. And you think about how important Tim Foley was to those teams, and how important Terry was, and Pat Parker, and I know he was really close with Pat and Rob Witten handling the kickoffs and was part of the special teams as well. But you don't do any of it without Stan. Without him, none of the field goals, none of the PATs, you don't get them. He was part of all that, and yeah, Terry was the one holding, and yeah, Foley was the one kicking, but I know that one's tough. Especially right now and over the summer with Mel McBride also passing, and Terry had some really nice thoughts on him during the Campbell game. It hasn't been a very good year in a lot of different respects.
You can say that again.
And I think that maybe the best way to celebrate someone who meant so much to Eagle Nation is just to go down to ULM and just get this done. And maybe we can share some more stories about Stan. We'll hopefully talk about that with Terry some more this weekend down at Malone Stadium. But for those who he meant a lot to, they're always going to remember him. And I think I've said this before, that you know what people mean to you when you talk about them in a certain way once they're gone. And I know what Terry thought about Stan, and I think that we're going to hear a lot more stories from other people that knew him. And being able to carry on that legacy is going to be a really important thing.
I can all but guarantee you're going to hear some Stan Stipe stories on the broadcast this weekend from Malone Stadium.
I'm looking forward to those.
I'm sure you're going to hear about the old days when it was Northeast Louisiana Indians and all of the good old stories that Terry has to bring.
He is still not convinced they're the Warhawks. He is not convinced that they've changed their name.
No, he's more convinced that they're the Warlords than the Warhawks.
That's another good story.
But nonetheless, it's Georgia Southern ULM, 7 o'clock the kickoff Eastern time. We'll be on the air at 5 o'clock. With the Eagle Tailgate Show, is Russ Brown, Terry Harvin, Frank Sulkowski, and myself will get you going up until kick, when Terry Harvin, Russ Brown, and the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, will take you through the play-by-play story. But until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.